until I was in my maybe 63, 64 years old, I really thought if I wasn't with a man, I didn't exist.
From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook.
Jane Fonda.
One of Hollywood's most exciting new stars.
There's a lot of hostility towards you.
Would you have done anything differently?
This is the beginning of my last act. In order to know how to go forward, I'm going to have to know where I've been.
Today, we're talking to actress Jane Fonda and documentary filmmaker Susan Lacy about their new film, Jane Fonda in Five Acts, on HBO.
Well, I'd wanted to make a film about Jane since I read her book about 17 years ago.
The movie chronicles Fonda's extraordinary life in the public eye and all of her struggles and triumphs behind the scenes.
Most of the people that had come to me over the years to do a documentary, a really in-depth portrait of me, were guys. And I knew instinctively that there should not be a guy doing this because it's very much a gender journey, and Susan got that.
In Lacy's documentary, we watch Fonda's life unfold as it's shaped by the men around her. First, her famous father, Henry Fonda. Then her first husband, French director Roger Vadim. Her second husband, political activist Tom Hayden. And then her third husband, Ted Turner.
I learned a lot with all the men in my life, but I learned the most with Ted.
In the final act, we see Fonda as she is now, a Hollywood star who has famously dedicated her life to political causes and feminist ideals.
I just felt like I had to become a righteous activist. I wanted my life to have meaning.
So I talked to Fonda and Lacy about all of that, about the labor of love this film was for the two of them. We also talked about Lacy's career documenting the lives of famous artists and her creation of the PBS film series American Masters. We also spent some time on what it means to be a controversial figure in the spotlight, especially in the era of President Donald Trump. For Fonda, who famously protested the Vietnam War and was publicly, viciously criticized over it, it's something she's very used to.
The fact is that when a celebrity lends her voice to a cause, it helps. And that's why the right wing attacks us. If it didn't make any difference, they wouldn't bother.
The HBO documentary film Jane Fonda in Five Acts is available on HBO Now, HBO Go, and on demand. Stay tuned for our conversation with Jane Fonda and Susan Lacy. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead? If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @APalmerDC. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now, our interview with Jane Fonda and Susan Lacy. Jane, Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. We are here with you at HBO's headquarters in New York, talking about your new documentary, Jane Fonda in Five Acts. It's out. The documentary is extremely personal. So I'm going to go first to you, Jane. Did you learn anything new about yourself over the course of the 21 hours of interviews you did for this?
Not really, because I had written a memoir, so some of it had been covered. But it's very different when you're doing it live with someone in front of a camera. So I had to relive it all, which was sometimes difficult. But I trusted Susan, and so I had no idea what she was going to do with all the material. I didn't see it until it was over.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
How did you guys build that trust? I know this was a project that was in the works for quite a long time.
I built it. Well, from my side, I had seen movies that, first of all, she created American Masters,
right,
at PBS, which I really respect. And then when she moved to HBO, well, you take it from there, Susan.
Well, I'd wanted to make a film about Jane since I read her book about 17 years ago. I was always at American Masters, searching for the stories that I wanted to tell and that I thought contributed to the cultural history of America, which is why I started the series. So I thought not only is Jane a great subject, she is around, and there's an incredible archive
alive.
with which to tell her story. I mean, you know, not everybody that I made films about were still with us, so that's a great advantage. But I always felt that if we couldn't make the film that could use all of the tools that you needed to really bring the film alive. I want to make movies. I didn't want to make, you know, new shows. Mm-hmm. And it was very expensive. So it was a lot of fundraising involved. And just never could put it together. So when I was making the move to go to HBO, I remembered that Jane... Sorry, one of the first things on my list. But Jane also had a series called Newsroom at HBO, mm-hmm. so I knew there would be a real receptivity to this, and so it just all came together very quickly.
And did you know each other before that, or did you have kind of a relationship?
We had met. Yes.
Okay. So you had some trust there. I mean, this is kind of personal stuff. Did you feel like you had to pull things out of her, or were you kind of just talking, kind of reliving it, you know, kind of as you went along?
Well, Jane's very easy to talk to, and Jane's, you know, very good storyteller and knows her story. As she said, she had spent a lot of time thinking about all these things. I don't think she always knew what we were going to talk about. And there are always those moments that you try to get the real spur of the moment reaction to something. Over the course of 12 interviews, which I look at as an extended conversation rather than interviews, I prepare. Like Jane, I'm a preparer. I don't go in not prepared. But I don't ever look at my notes, not once. I mean, they're sitting on my lap in case I, you know, what's it called when an actor doesn't remember their lines?
Forgetfulness?
There's some expression for it. That can occasionally happen if you get so lost in somebody's story, you forget where you were, and then it's good to have something to look down to. But I never do. So I go with wherever it's kind of taking us. But I make sure that I've gotten everything that I need. But it's really more of a conversation, and I think that builds. And you don't tackle the heavy emotional things right off the bat,
right.
You know.
Most of the people that had come to me over the years to do a documentary, a really in-depth portrait of me, were guys. And I knew instinctively that there should not be a guy doing this because it's very much a gender journey, and Susan got that. I'm grateful for that.
Was there a central message that you wanted people to leave after watching the movie, a particular view of who you are, your experience?
One of the things I think is don't settle in life. Keep curious. Can't you become more? Not talking about fame or wealth, but as a person, how can I grow more? How do I get smarter? Keep challenging yourself. I mean, when you see me in this documentary, how I started out, it's hard for me to watch that. I mean, oh, really? Well, all girls have to wear Lux soap is the most beautiful. I mean, telling my husband or telling Johnny Carson or whoever it was, oh, I think my husband understands me better than I do. Really? I thought that? and I think it's good that she included all that because it shows how far I went. And so I think that should encourage people to not settle, to keep challenging. Also, to own your mistakes, to admit your mistakes, take responsibility for them. Because if you don't do that, you can't possibly grow and evolve. And then examine your life. Why live an unexamined life? The way you move forward is to examine your life and why it's been the way it is, and who were your parents, and why did they behave this way to you? And your grandparents, why did they treat your parents the way they did? Because it's those early relationships that kind of determine who you are in the beginning. And if you don't understand them, it's hard to know how you heal from them.
One of the things, a lot of the movie is about kind of your husband's, your relationships with your father. In the final act, we hear you say basically, you finally know what it's like to not need a man. What did you mean by that?
Until I was in my maybe 63, 64 years old, I really thought if I wasn't with a man, I didn't exist. I mean, I like every one of my husbands, I thought, oh my God, if he wasn't with me, nobody would want to know me or nobody would come over. I wouldn't be able to exist. Really, that's when Tom Hayden, my second husband, fell in love with somebody else, my whole world fell apart. And it's not that it was such a great marriage, but the fact that I was married to him gave me security and an identity and structure. And when that went away, I just completely fell apart. And by the time I left Ted, and I was in my early 60s, I just realized I'm really sad that it didn't work out, but I'm going to be okay. Now, that was just one step. You know, it's a process to keep gaining more confidence, and you backslide, you get scared, and you get brave again. And a lot of the fact that I can keep evolving is because I have great women friends. Don't know what I'd do without them.
Talk about that self-doubt. What a piece of advice. Our listeners are a lot of women, right? And that's always in your head, and you're in a meeting, am I asking the right things? If I say it, am I going to say the dumb thing? Can I be by myself? What piece of advice would you have for women listening?
Read a lot of books by strong women writers who talk about this. Read a lot of books, you know, by Gloria Steinem and Robin Morgan and Adrienne Rich and others.
Virginia Woolf.
Right? Understand where the insecurity comes from. Who did that to you? Because we're not born insecure, right? We're made insecure. And so if we can figure out why we're made insecure, then maybe we can understand that the people who made us insecure, they were dealing with their own issues. You know, bad behavior is the language of the wounded, and chances are they were made to feel insecure. And they, you realize it really had nothing to do with you. What I realized that I hadn't known before is I've been brave. And there's been a certain integrity, a certain lack of integrity too, but there's been some resiliency and some things that I started to feel proud of. It never occurred to me that I had anything in my life to feel proud about. And, you know, I was 63. And, you know, it cost me my marriage because I realized I deserve respect. I deserve democracy in this relationship. And then when I tried to renegotiate for that, it didn't work. But by that time, I knew that in order to be a whole person and standing on my own two feet, I couldn't stay in a marriage where my wholeness was not respected, and so I left. But I left more as a whole person.
Susan, I want to ask you, you've said before that sometimes you fear your subjects hating the final product, that maybe your work gets it wrong about them. That's part of, I mean, I think most of our professional fears. Is there a time when you thought you did get it wrong, or have you had that actually happen, or is it just kind of a fear that, you know, you're always living on the edge?
I wouldn't call it a fear. It's out of respect that you want the person that you have spent 2 years, you know, figuring out how to tell their story, because it is an interpretation. You want them to like it. And so I always show the film just before I'm locking picture. Just in case there's something that they want to add or that they feel I got wrong, if it's valid. But it's not really a fear. It's more, it's just out of respect. You know, I don't whip these things together. So I spent a lot of time thinking them through. And Jane actually had a really good point when she saw the film.
What was it?
It was really a good point, and sometimes you can just lose the forest for the trees. When Jane was accused of treason, she said, "You didn't make it clear that I was cleared of those charges." Wow, that was really important, and I was really glad I'd shown it to her so that I could get that fixed. Now, if she'd said, "Well, I think you got Vietnam wrong," I'm not sure. I probably would have felt, you know, differently about that, but I, you know, anything that's valid that helps deepen the portrait, I'm all ears for. But I wait a long time before I get to the point where I'm happy with the film. Have I ever felt I got it wrong? I don't know. It's a really hard question to answer. I don't think so. I think that there are films that I think are better. I think I've made some films that I think are better than other films I've made. But I don't think I've ever been really totally wrong.
Right. You know? Well, let's... The segue is very nice into the treason question. We're Politico. Obviously, we're very focused on politics. That is an undercurrent that flows throughout the entire film. You talk a lot about the criticism that you've gotten over the years. I wanted to talk to you about that because right now we're in a moment where a lot of people in Hollywood are getting very political. How do you think you handled it? Are you surprised by all the negative feedback that some of them get when they take on kind of pet causes or issues?
No, because the fact is that when a celebrity lends her voice to a cause, it helps. It's effective. And that's why the right wing attacks us. If it didn't make any difference, they wouldn't bother. But, you know, that's what's important about to me about the Time's Up movement.
One of the things I thought was really interesting, and I don't know that I had put the pieces together when I was watching it, is obviously very, everybody knows about the work that you did on Vietnam, but the stuff on 9 to 5, for example, you were kind of ahead of your time on pay equity and, you know, unionization and things like that, and being able to use your star power to create movies that, you know, put those issues into the mass, to the masses. Of those issues, is there anything that you kind of can pull out and say, I'm really proud of what I was able to do here?
I'm really proud of coming home. I'm proud that that year the VA, the Veterans Administration, took a poll and it tied with Green Beret as their favorite film.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting bookends.
I wanted people to understand what the soldiers were facing when they came home, and I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of 9 to 5. And the reason that I did that is because one of my close friends is an organizer, and she would tell me stories about what women in offices were having to deal with, and I said, I want to make a movie about it. I'm really, really proud of that.
And China Syndrome,
which helped people understand 3 Mile Island when it came out. Yeah. But they'll always be. All of them have been attacked. And so what? There are entrenched interests that are going to try to keep you from elevating the working man and woman and elevating the things that are making a lot of money for some people but that are really dangerous for the rest of us. But you have to keep doing it. And I think one thing I like about the movie is it shows that they'll try to kill you and destroy you, but you just keep going.
Yeah, the tapes of...
I mean, it's funny having Nixon saying, yeah, what's
the matter with Jane Fonda?
Yeah. I'm still here. Where's he?
Yep.
Well, talk about that. How would a young Jane Fonda have felt if President Trump was the president back then?
It's a very interesting question because you have to put yourself in the context of the times.
Yeah, the times. Or, but even, I mean, you can talk about it now, too. I mean, how you feel about his presidency so far.
It makes me terrified. Here's something, though, that I think is really important. I hate what he stands for, what he does, what he says. I don't hate him. I feel that I understand a little bit. This is a man who was traumatized as a child by his father, who had a mother that didn't protect him. And the behavior is the language of the wounded. So you have to have empathy for him as a human being while you hate what he does. And I think that that has to also transfer to the people who voted for him. Some of them you can't possibly persuade otherwise because they're white supremacists, you know, or they're so far off the spectrum for their own traumatic reasons probably. But there's a whole bunch of Trump voters who we have to open our hearts to and understand why they voted the way they did and try to reach them. Because part of the problem is that people on our side haven't been talking to them and expressing empathy. What happens when every single thing in your life that gave you an identity and security is taken away and nobody seems to be paying any attention when it comes to policymaking? Of course, when a strong man comes along in the chaos of late-stage capitalism and climate chaos, he's going to appeal to that just like, you know, I won't even, you know, a lot of tyrants do and play on that in a divisive way. but it's our loss. Even if we could win back politically the seats that we've lost in the Senate and Congress and state legislatures with women and people of color, et cetera, morally we can't write off the huge swath of humans in the middle of our country who are really hurting.
It's radical empathy.
Radical kinship. Yes, we have to stand at the margins with the marginalized in kinship, not in some kind of patronizing way, but really understanding what they're going through.
You mentioned Time's Up, which you're involved in. What can women do to lift one another up in this industry or just kind of in any industry?
I think we have to believe them. I think we have to we have to stand together in an organized unity. When we fight for pay equity, we're also fighting for a safe workspace. When we are respected as and that is reflected in our wages and in our positions, if we're in decision-making positions, we're going to be safer. And we don't have to put up with bad behavior.
So is that kind of the cause that you're most passionate about now? Where else are your energies in these kinds of issues?
Fighting for one fair wage. I've taken Lily with me to Michigan, who she comes from Michigan, and we have a ballot measure there, and it's we're really fighting because Michigan is a swing state. Having one fair wage on the ballot encourages people to come to the ballot to vote themselves a raise. You know, I made 9 to 5. I'm very interested in labor issues. I think the loss of unions is a catastrophe for people who live in the middle of this country, and we have to fight for unions, and we have to stand together and organize. It can't be an individual thing. We shouldn't allow a woman to be fighting to protect herself on her own. We have to have each other's backs across working sectors.
The 2018 midterms, have you gotten involved at
all? That's what I'm, well,
yeah,
I mean, I don't get so involved with candidates as I do. You know, healthcare is way at the top of the agenda. The issue of precondition, health conditions, and is that going to be covered in health insurance? Major, major issue. And if you explain to people, because if all they're watching is Fox, which is usually the case, they're not going to know that Trump's health policies will not cover existing preconditions. And it's like, oh, it's a big aha. Mm-hmm. And you never want to criticize Trump, and you don't want to criticize Fox. You want to tell people things they don't know. Just like what changed and saved my life was being told things I didn't know by American soldiers. We have to reach out and listen and then respond in a way that's meaningful. So that's what I do. I've spent a lot of time in Michigan and in California doing the grassroots knocking on doors.
Susan, have you ever had any interest in documenting the lives of politicians rather than artists?
That's a good question. And I think I'm getting ready to maybe...
Ooh, a spoiler.
No, I would like to. I mean, when I, you know, I've always been interested in people's stories, and that's not limited to cultural figures. But when I started American Masters, that was the emphasis. And I didn't do, and also there was another series called American Experience, and they were doing the presidents. So I kind of wanted to make that distinction. It was a wide definition. I mean, did many journalists. I did 60 Minutes in American Masters and Edward R. Murrow and the beginners of the founders of the environmental movement. So it's about cultural impact. Mm-hmm. And so certainly presidents and politicians have huge cultural impact. So that might be a direction. Yeah, no, I'm not limited. Though I was raised by artists, musicians, and my heart is probably with people in that area of life. So, yeah.
Who are the women in politics that you're really watching or are really excited about right now?
Besides Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Have you seen her workout?
Well, I'm very intrigued by Kamala Harris. I think she's really smart and compelling and asks good questions, and she's not intimidated. I just love her.
Barbara Lee, Pramila Jayapal, who's a congresswoman who I was just canvassing with her last week. Yeah. Katie Hill in California. There's a lot of really good young women coming up. I mean, I think it's so great how the women are coming forward. This is our time. Yeah.
And we are watching the Republican women senators very carefully to see whether they get some spine.
We're about to get the hook, but I want to ask you, Jane, you obviously have spent a long time in political causes, political issues. Have you ever thought about running for office yourself?
Never, no. I don't. It's important to know what your, you know, weaknesses are and what your strengths are, and being a politician would not play to my strengths, that's for sure.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Love Politico.
Women Rule is produced by Rena Flores. Dave Shaw is our executive producer, and our booker is Jessica Andrews. If you're a fan of the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. And one last thing, if you have any thoughts about who we should feature on Women Rule, let me know. Tweet me at @apalmerdc. And of course, hit that subscribe button. And thanks for listening.